Welcome to the Mayo Clinic Cardiovascular Continuing Medical Education Podcast. Join us each week to discuss the most pressing topics in cardiology and gain valuable insights that can be directly applied to your practice.
Welcome back to Mayo Clinic's Cardiovascular Podcast Series, Interviews with the Experts. I'm your host, Sharon Hayes. I'm a non-invasive cardiologist and vice chair of faculty development and academic advancement for the Department of Cardiovascular Medicine here in Rochester, Minnesota. Today, I'm joined by my colleague, Dr. Soren Pusilaru, who's professor of medicine, chair of our structural heart disease division here in Rochester. But as he says, he's an echocardiographer at heart. Our topic today is the TRIO score and choosing patients most likely to benefit from tricuspid valve intervention. Dr. Pusilaru will share with us some contemporary management strategies for tricuspid regurgitation, the sometimes forgotten valve that has been coming back into the spotlight because of new ways to assess the impact of regurgitation, the risks, and new options for non-surgical intervention. So, Soren, why should we reconsider what we've always thought about the tricuspid valve?
Oh, gosh, Sharon, that's a loaded question, you know. So first of all, this has been very interesting to a lot of us, and has been a passion of mine for a few years now. I want to thank you the opportunity to share some of the things we learned. We know for 20 years already that tricuspid regurgitation is associated with excess mortality. But as soon as we learned that 20 years ago, people started questioning whether it's the disease of the valve that kills you, or whether it's the other disease that leads to the valve regurgitation that will eventually take your patient's life. So for the longest time, people were talking about you die with tricuspid regurgitation rather than you die of tricuspid regurgitation. And over the last two decades, we learned slowly that almost in every possible circumstance, there is excess mortality associated with severe tricuspid valve regurgitation, hence the interest to reconsider our approach to that.
We want to hear about how we should revisit understanding our patients with this actual score, and I'm going to let you get into detail, but why do we need a risk score?
Well, so it's extraordinarily variable in terms of etiology, and it's extraordinarily variable in terms of outcome. So we took the opportunity of having a large tertiary center, and we look at our experience with about 20,000 or so patients who have a first ever diagnosis of moderate or more tricuspid valve regurgitation. And intuitively, you would say if you're older, you'll survive less. If you're younger, you'll survive more. And to a certain extent, that's true. But to my surprise is when you take, say, an 80-some-year-old patient, they may live as long as 15 years, or they may die the very next day after you see them. And there's really no rhyme or reason why that should happen from a superficial view. So the TR per se will not tell you what your patient will do. And then if you think about it, you have to have better tools in gauging the risk of the one individual who sits right next to you when you have the clinic visit. It's not enough to tell them what 100 people will do. You will need to tell them what they will do. And that's the reason we felt it's really important to develop a risk score.
So tell us more about how did you come up with it, and can regular cardiologists like me actually use it?
So the very first thing we decided to do when looking at a risk score was to make it very, very simple. If you make things too complicated, no one will ever be able to apply them in a clinical setting because we are too busy. We have a lot of things to do. So it had to be simple. We, on purpose, wanted to make this something that can be embraced not only by cardiologists, but also primary care physicians. So on purpose, we did not put parameters of right ventricular function, fancy indices from echo, MRI, which we have, but we wanted to make something very, very easy. So we took with these 20,000 or so patients and see what's associated with mortality in terms of simple clinical parameters. And it turns out that eight of them, which are just age, the gender, renal failure, history of heart failure, lung disease, some laboratory tests like AST, and then a heart rate that's fast and presence of severe TR, where all the things we needed to have a really a good model to predict who is going to survive longer or shorter. Instead of having this extraordinary variability in one-year survival from 0 to 80%, now you can break it down in various levels. So we created this score that goes to a maximum, theoretical maximum of 12, but practically anything more than 9, it's already bad enough. And then you know, a person who has a risk of 0, their one-year survival, it's 95%, and the person has a risk of 9 or more, probably mortality is going to be 80% in these patients. So that's a huge difference, and it helps you understand how sick overall is the patient in front of you.
So, and I just want to allow you to say that this score is available to anyone, and you're going to share a QR code with the audience so they can access this and actually work with it.
Absolutely. So on the website, when we post this interview, we will put some slides. There's going to be a QR code. There's going to be a link. But even before you do that, just go Google or Bing or your search engine of choice. Just put TRIO score calculator, and it's going to pop right there. It's free of use. You don't need to remember how many points or what to do. Don't remember which factor. It's very easy to calculate, and it's going to give you the one-year and five-year mortality in prediction in your model. And the other thing I was going to say, you know, it's not a perfect score. Nothing is perfect in life, but the performance, it's probably as good as, if not slightly better than other scores, like Chad's VASC, for instance, you know, so just about in that neighborhood. So we feel this is a fairly straightforward tool and easy to use.
Once a clinician has looked at the score, they may be given a score to one of their patients. How do you recommend people practically use the score with that patient sitting in front of them?
Looking at all these large number of patients, you start to understand that there's more to it than just the tricuspid valve regurgitation per se. And then when we look at our own population, so say you have patients who have lower scores or intermediate scores or higher scores, does presence of tricuspid valve regurgitation influence them in the same way, or is that a different effect depending on how sick you are? And we did not expect that, but this is what we've seen. Patients who have low or intermediate scores, the impact of tricuspid regurgitation severity on mortality is very notable. In other words, if you have a score of 5 and you have moderate TR, you have a probability of death. If you have severe TR with the same score of 5, you'll have a substantially higher probability of death. So that adds a lot to your mortality. If you have a patient who has a very high score, the impact of tricuspid regurgitation was non-existent. So it doesn't make any difference there. So I think in many ways, this score helps you separate patients who die with TR or off TR. And that means that perhaps when you start thinking, okay, let's do an intervention, let's do surgery, let's do any of the modern things that we try to do, you should consider that patients more likely to benefit from your intervention are the ones with the lower scores. I think that's an important concept when selecting what you're going to do with your patient.
That's great. And because you've studied like thousands of patients, I know that you have learned many other things about tricuspid regurgitation, as well as how to manage and how to predict. So what else has TRIO and your investigations told you?
So we have lots of talented young staff here, and because we do have them, they have great ideas, and Vidu Anand, who's one of our young rising stars, had this thought. Well, you know, don't fight the computer, just work with the computer and see what the computer can tell you about large numbers. So she did what we call a clustering analysis, which is fancy words for saying we will let the computer computer segregate the patients into phenotypes that the computer chooses. We have no say in that. We just provide the input data. So, the age, the gender, a lot of other variables that we did not include originally in the score. And what came up was that the computer isolates five very distinct phenotypes of tricuspid regurgitation. And the lower, earlier disease, the more advanced disease are kind of two-thirds or even a little over two-thirds of the population. But then three very, very distinct clusters. So there's the patients who have chronic kidney disease, the patients who have ischemic heart disease, and the patients who have chronic lung disease. And much to our surprise, the patients with highest mortality were the ones with renal disease and followed right after that by the patient with lung disease, which is not all that expected if you think about that. So all sorts of things you can learn out of that, it's amazing.
I'm hoping that as we look at this further, those additional refinements of the phenotype may help us guide even more, because obviously somebody with renal or lung disease is going to be at higher operative risk.
Yeah, right. Most definitely. The other thing that we also learn in the process, you have a large number of patients and now you start following them up in time. And the issue is, we all agree, no question about that. Most of the tricuspid regurgitation is functional, so it's related to another disease that enlarges the right ventricle and right atrium. And therefore, the first line of therapy is medical therapy. No question about that. But how much should you expect out of medical therapy? Is there a limit to that? Everybody responds, some people respond. So we learned about that. And the paper is not published yet. It's under review. But about half of the patients who have severe TR do respond. And about a sixth of the patients who have only moderate TR actually progress on medical therapy because their underlying disease gets worse. Very, very important. If you do not see regression of tricuspid regurgitation at 1 year, it's very unlikely to happen past that. It can, but that would be rather unusual. So if you're waiting for a medical therapy response, don't go past 1 year.
Do you need to wait a full year? I mean, is there any signal? Because I think that's the thing. Patients are impatient. We're impatient. We say, let's get you on a good, volume management program and control your blood pressure and all of that. That's sort of another question beyond TRIO. But I think, do you have some advice for, is it 2 months? Is it 6 months? And then you say, hey, we got to refer this patient on for something else.
I think with the emergence of low-risk procedures and with the understanding also that surgery, in fact, it's not such a terrible thing in these patients. If you refer them early, their mortality is actually quite low. The bad mortality comes from referring the patient too late. To me, it's a philosophical question. What do you call a patient who has no edema because they're on 40 milligrams of Lasix? Do you call that patient symptomatic with TR or asymptomatic with TR? It's not that easy to answer. And when you move from 40 to 80 and from 80 to 120 or from 120 to 160, are you preventing the patient the risk of an intervention or are you shortening their lives by not giving them an intervention? So I think you're right. 1 year may be too long. To me, maybe bring them back in 3 to 6 months. If they have persistent severe TR despite your best effort to do medical therapy, and if they are symptomatic or they have right ventricular dysfunction, well, then start thinking about doing something to the tricuspid valve.
We've got the score. We've got a better way to assess and predict for these patients. What's in their future? Tell us what we can look forward to in terms of fixing this tricuspid valve.
Oh, this has been a fabulous year. And it's just February, So we have two devices approved. So that's fantastic news. So the Evoque valve from Edwards and the TriClip from Abbott, they have been approved for treatment, percutaneous treatment of the tricuspid valve regurgitation. Not only that, but also the surgeons have a lot more appetite to go and intervene on the tricuspid valve with isolated surgery, just because there's a better understanding of risk, and there's actually a preoperative risk score now from a French group, that TRI score, that can give you the risk of surgery in this patient. So overall, I think it's all hands on deck, you know. So we want to treat these patients very aggressively with medical therapy. But if that fails and if they are symptomatic, we should offer them the, you know, the intervention they need, the surgical or percutaneous intervention on the valve.
I would ask another, because we have folks who are listening to us who might say, can every cardiac surgeon do this isolated? Is it something that we should think about sending to a referral center? I know the recently the percutaneous devices likely need to come to a referral center, but what about the surgery? Is there something new or different?
So like everything is life, you know, with experience comes mastery of one field. So I think the more the surgeon performs an intervention, the better they get at it. If you look at the publications from the STS database, the consensus is this is really not the surgeon's fault that the mortality is so high. It's just the extraordinarily sick population who eventually makes it to the surgical intervention. That's part of the problem. For Mayo Clinic, just looking at Mayo Clinic data, the mortality for isolated tricuspid regurgitation is actually quite low. It's a little less than 3%. So and that is with the risk factors included. So with the advanced disease included. So it's not as high as we fear of. But you need to send your patient earlier, and your surgeon will do okay.
So any last thoughts before we wrap up?
It's a fantastic opportunity for all of us to help our patients better. I think really that this is not a disease that is forgiving. It just takes a long time to punish you, but it will eventually do so. And I think it's time for us to be more aggressive about it. And don't take me wrong. I don't think you should send everybody with TR straight to an intervention or surgery. I think do due diligence. But don't think that because they are apparently well, that the disease will let them live forever, because it won't.
That's a really powerful ending. So this wraps up this week's episode of Interviews with the Experts. And I'd like to thank Dr. Pieslerou for joining us today and discussing this important topic.
Thank you so much, Sharon, for having us, having me. And thank you for all the listeners to tune in. And I hope that TrioScore will be helpful to you.
We look forward to you joining us again next week for another Interview with the Expert. Be well.
Thank you for joining us today. Feel free to share your thoughts and suggestions about the podcast by emailing cvselfstudy@mayo.edu. Be sure to subscribe to the Mayo Clinic Cardiovascular CME podcast on your favorite platform, and tune in each week to explore today's most pressing cardiology topics with your colleagues at Mayo Clinic.
This has been a Mayo Clinic podcast.